Hello there, Vio here to let you know that this discussion episode will include spoilers for Dream Squad and up until and including episode 46. So if you haven't caught up yet, maybe skip this one for now. Welcome to Waypoint, or as I like to call it, this little special episode, Waypoint. Behind the dreams.
Ooh.
We'll take a look into the entire thing that was Dream Squad and ask a bunch of questions to our GM mostly, Jules, and a bunch of questions that our esteemed cast from the Dream Squad have asked. So, if you're wondering how Dream Squad came to be and what everyone else was thinking, feeling, and or not thinking or feeling, let's find out today. I'm Viola. I will be your talk show host, I guess.
QM question master.
Yeah. And I guess this episode will be for Dreamland denizens who want the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
Good luck in Dream Squad.
Hi, I'm Sanya. My pronouns are she, they. This episode is for me because Dream Squad was really awesome and I really enjoyed listening to it. You guys did a great job.
Hey.
Hi, I'm Mimi, they, them, and I've been in Dream Squad for most of it, except two episodes, so I suppose I can answer questions. Maybe.
And I'm Jules. I'm usually the game master. Today I am apparently being asked a lot of questions, but also I will listen to a lot of answers from other people because I will not answer all of them. And my pronouns are he, him, and she, her.
All right, let's get started. I have written down on paper with my own hand a bunch of questions that I just thought I wanted to know. And as I've said, I've asked our incredible Dream Squad cast, JPG, Dana, Luca, and Tess, if they have any questions, and they did. So I think we'll just start with the most obvious one. Jules, what gives? Where did Dream Squad come from?
Oh, man. Okay, so, like, in a meta sense or in universe?
I would say in a meta sense. Like, yeah. When did you first get the idea and how has it changed over the... Oh my god, it probably has been years.
Year probably, right? Like, we started Dream Squad before there were 2 years of Waypoint.
Yeah.
I think you were all probably there when that idea came about even. That was definitely something that started as something we were, I think, talking about during a recording session of Waypoint. The idea basically to get Max to go back home. I think the idea first really came up when Max's mom first showed up on the podcast in the form of like a call. And it was immediately very clear that like, okay, Max wants to separate himself from his mom. And that is the point where at least I had the idea of like, okay, to resolve this, either Max's mom has to come to Waypoint or Max has to go to Dreamland. And since Dreamland very early on was one of the world building elements that immediately like drew a lot of attention and was very fun to play with, the idea of going to Dreamland came up pretty early too.
And Mimi, now a question for you. What did you think when Jules actually came with the idea of let's do this and maybe pitched you an idea about what he wanted to do?
I mean, I was all for it. You know how much I like making Max suffer.
I would say you succeeded.
Yes, I did. I did. And I had a lot of help from the entire team and I'm so grateful.
Mm. You are so mean to Max.
Poor I am.
Yeah, the idea of having a guest cast also came up, like...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I actually feel like going back to Dreamland in some way was pretty early on, like a discussion. Yeah. And I don't know exactly when like the Dream Squad came up as an idea, but I do remember talking to Jules about it while walking around in the dark somewhere.
Yeah. I think that was on New Year's.
It could be, yeah.
When we visited you. I think that's what that was.
Because we talked about it a lot.
Yeah, that was like almost a year ago now.
And that's when I got like the first details, I think.
Yeah. The idea of going to Dreamland was very early, but the idea of having guest stars for Dream Squad, I can't even remember when that came about.
Yeah.
I think there was like in the beginning a mention of Sunny and I were gonna be in it and play different characters and maybe get one or two guest stars. I'm not sure when it changed to we're going to do it all with guest stars. It probably changed because we actually got to know enough people to have
to make it feasible.
Yeah.
I mean, there was also the issue of me having an appointment for surgery. So I was like, okay, there's like 2 months I probably cannot record.
I mean, we did do the guest episodes at least. The ones about Moon and Charlotte.
That was really great. I really enjoyed that. Because I actually really, really miss recording Waypoint. So I absolutely enjoyed Dream Squad. It was so cool. But I'm also very happy that we're back recording.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I genuinely remember. I think the idea of having Dream Squad be fully guest stars probably came about when we recorded the Moon Harbor crossover, which was like a good amount of time, which was like half a year before we actually started doing Dream Squad. And I remember after the Moon Harbor crossover, like the thing that kind of got the ball rolling for me was that was the point where I decided, okay, if there's any chance that I can get JPG, I want JPG on.
Yes.
And from that on, it expanded outward. Because then the idea came up, okay, we cross over with Moon Harbor. We can get someone else from Moon Harbor in too. And if Tess wants to do it, that's perfect. Because we know Tess mostly as a game master. And also because we've worked with Luca before, the idea came up, hey, we could also get an equal amount of people in from Super Idols. The original idea, I think, was even that we could get Aaron in, maybe. But that didn't come about. But I'm really glad that we had Dana and Luca on. It was great.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just such great interactions.
Speaking of, I would love to hear how you pitched this idea to the guest stars. And how much did you tell them beforehand?
I mean, the basic concept, right? The thing that I started off with usually was just, hey, you want to be on Dream Squad? You want to be on Waypoint. We're going to have like a guest character heavy arc. And we would like people on. And when people said, yeah, I'd be interested, usually I'd give like more details. The basic idea was I explained what Dreamland is, what Dream Squad is, and basically the vibe I wanted to go for, which I think I mainly pitched as like, imagine the Suicide Squad, but it's all stuff that you would see on Disney Plus. Like a Disney Plus version of the Suicide Squad. That was kind of the idea that I originally went with.
That actually exists in real life.
Yeah, exactly.
I do have a question from JPG here. He writes, out of all the capitalist hellscapes, why choose to prestige Disney over others?
Oh shit, we said Disney multiple times already. I always try to stop myself from doing
that. It's all right. No one's gonna listen to our Q&A episode.
You can just bleep it out.
Yeah. Just bleep it out. I'm gonna say I d- up. So when it's bleeped out, it sounds like I said another word.
Oh, that would Jules, be very do a Mickey Mouse laugh. Do a Mickey Mouse laugh.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, can I do a Mickey Mouse laugh over it then?
Yeah.
Every time we say
shit, now I'm on the spot. Kind of like that.
Yeah,
is that an understandable?
Like
is that an understandable? Whatever that rat is called,
Ricky the Rat.
Yeah, Ricky the Rat laugh.
Ricky the Rat. Yeah.
So why this franchise?
Yeah, I can say that pretty easily because I'm really big into Defunct Land.
For those who don't know what that is, what is it?
It's a YouTube channel, which is basically talks about theme park attractions and theme park history and stuff. And there was a Defunctland video that I watched right, like, around the time we started working on Waypoint when it was, like, building out world-building stuff. And there was a video on, like, the original plans for Epcot. And my idea basically was, okay, what if the original plans for Epcot had actually happened? And that's kind of how Dreamland came about, because it was originally supposed to be like a planned autonomous community that was ruled by the company. Basically like, a fight version of a company town. And the idea came up, what if that expanded into the entirety of Florida and was originally bought from the US government? And there's so much, like, mythology about stuff, like corporate stuff, that is very fun to exploit for a setting like this. Like, for example, Walt's frozen head being somewhere and stuff like that.
Oh, right, yeah.
That is very fun to export into a superhero setting. So it kind of, like, just ran from there. And then there was the element of us, every time we mentioned Dreamland, making it worse and more horrible.
Oh, yeah. It's like... Yeah. When I first heard about Dreamland, it was horrifying, but not, like, even a fraction of the degree that we made it.
Yeah, like, originally it was horrifying because it was a nation owned by a corporation.
Yes.
That, like, played very nice, good world, while, of course, being kind of corporate behind the scenes. How bad it actually was just developed over time because we just kept making it worse.
Yes, yes.
Hey, what I just realized, Dreamland also using child stars and destroying their lives.
Mm, yeah, yeah, a lot of stuff came in that was just like pastiches on shit.
Yeah, I mean, that was also kind of the idea behind Ecstatic in the first place, because I wanted to play the star and I really wanted to play up the angle of being groomed into being a superhero, basically. Mm. And just that parallel to being a child star is pretty strong from the get-go.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're just Hannah Montana.
It was really fun because I pitched the character to Jules because I really wanted to play that type of star. And then Jules was like, oh, I have the perfect background.
Yeah.
I have the perfect background. I know where you're from. And it just worked out great.
Yeah.
So, Jules, I have another question from JPG, who asks, what did we not get to see in Dreamland that you were hoping would come up, but didn't?
Honestly, I don't think anything. Like, the things that I wanted to come up basically all came up. Here's one thing. Basically, when we started with Dream Squad, we had a session where we just, like, talked out backstories and stuff like that to kind of make it all fit together. And there's, like, a major character that was really irrelevant in the end, that was a part of multiple players' backstories, which is Papaganda. Papaganda came up once, I think, in our second episode, but then just kind of didn't really factor into the plot much. That's a character who was, like, I think the current manager of Troubledore, and also probably the one responsible for the creation of Wacky.
Yeah.
And it's just a character who didn't really matter much for the plot. Like, I think it was in the final episode where we had that moment of, I think, Troubledore asking Doug Dreamer, like, hey, what's with Wacky? Like, what did you do with Wacky and stuff? And he has no idea what that's about. He would have no idea what that's about because it wasn't him who did that. It was someone else acting independently. But... also, I think it's much funnier in the end that we have no idea, like, how Wacky happened.
Wacky's story turned out to be much more about current change than what happened in the past or, like, who it was before.
Yeah, like, the plot ultimately kind of solidified on Max as a main plot element. Becca became very relevant and Becca's whole story. And Miss Olympic's background became relevant in the end. But Troubledore and Wacky were more like, you know, yeah, as you said, change in the moment than set on their backstories.
Mm. Speaking of Wacky, JPG continues asking, when will you release the wonderful Wacky merch? Soon? Later?
We'll release it when we do the merch drop for the other Waypoint merch.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll release it when there's people who will buy it. Let's say that.
So, on the topic of merch, Dana asks, what piece of newly printed Dream Squad merch is going to age the worst, the fastest after the incident? I have a feeling it's Wacky merch.
Yeah, literally anything with Wacky.
Yeah.
Wacky's not only dead, but died in a pretty horrific way in front of the eyes of people.
Yes, very horrifically. Yeah. I actually think that this specific generation of Dream Squad, since it only lasted very shortly and has some controversy around it, it's probably going to be like collector's items.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of them. A lot of it will probably be destroyed by Dreamland. So anything that survives that is going to be like super valuable in collector's circles.
Yeah, it's like the print copies before they go into full production.
Speaking of Dream Squad, Tess asks us, which former member of Dream Squad would you most like to meet? With the addendum for us to just make up some canon now. So, here, Everyone, invent one former Dream Squad member that you would like to meet.
I will say, yeah, we haven't actually set up many of them. Like, we know that Mr. Olympic has been in a couple of Dream Squads. We know that Imaginite was also in a couple of Dream Squads. And I think fairly early on, like, some names were invented. There's this scene in the very first episode with the fashion designer who made Max's new costume. And he name drops a bunch of other Dream Squad members he made costumes for. I could look those up as inspiration.
Okay, I was just going to make someone up.
You can absolutely also do that.
The person from the Dream Squad that I would like to meet is Dr. Furface, who can talk to animals and was actually a veterinarian.
Nice.
And I think like his entire spiel would be like, oh no, if there's any animals that were running rampant or mutant monsters or something, that he would be the one to come over and talk to them. And of course, he had some animal companions, and thus he would have been very popular. And to be honest, I just would want to ask him, what's my cat thinking when she's staring at a wall? Like what's going on in there? And that's it.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's just me, Vio, wanting to know what the hell's going on in my cat's head.
Don't we all want to know that?
What about you, Mimi? Who do you want to meet?
I am thinking...
Everything you say here will magically become canon, and Jules will have to deal with it.
Yes, that is just such a power. I'm going to say Robin Rook. He steals from the poor to give to the rich.
Nice. Very likable, I can imagine.
That really fits into Dreamland.
Is he a heel, like in the wrestling sense?
I guess. Like, that's not the official tagline he has, but it's the accurate one.
That's fair. Is he a sexy fox?
I think he is a sexy Arctic fox.
Nice. Looking out for me.
Also, it would make total sense that in a country of Dream Squad, like someone who goes after the little guy who stole a pen from his office or something, that this would be like the propaganda of the entire Dreamland population.
Yeah, he fights against the increasing wave in crime.
Like, if you cross the company, he will come for you.
Yes.
I mean, supermarkets have to close because of all the thefts, you know? That's where we need him. I'm going to make someone up. Here, I can create lore.
I do that every day.
You also make up lore. I'm going to say one of the members of the first Dream Squad, which is Riverbolt Rolf, who is like has very much a black and white cartoon theme going for him and who has music-based powers. I would like to meet him because that sounds very fun. I would like to know more about his music-based powers.
That does sound pretty interesting.
Okay, I'm gonna make up one as well. It's gonna be Miss Hypnosis, and she basically can talk to anyone and make them believe whatever she says.
Mm.
Ooh.
She is very much needed in public relations when, you know, Dreamland is in conflict with someone else. So she can just, you know, get rid of the problem.
Interesting, like a mediator. Mm. Kind of thing.
Yeah. She tells them some lies and they are like, oh, okay, that's fine. And yeah.
Is she good at it or does she engage in mishypnosis sometimes?
It happens sometimes.
Mm.
Close ties to propaganda.
Yeah.
Oh, I just remembered. We did establish another previous member of Dream Squad. Devil Advocate used to be a member of Dream
Squad.
Right.
Oh, right. That
guy. Yeah.
Oh.
Fucking coward.
Before he became civilian.
Before he became worse, a lawyer.
Okay, speaking of what we would like to see, Luca, who plays Mr. Olympic, asks, if you had to get mutated by the gene Hackman, which animal would you pick? Which, as Jules pointed out when he asked the question, that's a very sly way of asking about our fursonas.
Yeah. That is the only question I have prepared in advance. I do not want to act calmly on this. I need to think about this very clearly because, like, my favorite animal is a raccoon. But
oh no,
I don't think I want to be like mutated into a raccoon. I think from personal experience that cats have a banger life, so I just go with cat. Like, that just seems great. That just seems fun. And also, I could annoy so many people with Cats 2019 jokes if I was actually a humanoid cat. So I'm gonna go with that.
I'm just gonna put it in here real quick. Luca will ask later about our favorite moments. And one of my favorite moments was you doing the Mac Avity joke and Tess just without hesitation saying, I hate you.
Yeah, Tess just threatening to kill me out of nowhere.
Okay, so Jules, unsurprisingly, wants to become a cat person just to make cat 2019 jokes. Mimi, Sunny, what do you want to be?
I don't know, an owl.
Oh yeah, owl sounds nice.
I want to be able to fly. I think that's pretty cool. And, you know, owls are active during the night, and that just fits me.
Yeah, that's valid.
That's just what life is about. Flying around at night, making cool sounds, and eating mice.
And hacking off their fur and bones in a compact little pellet.
And now Mimi's coming up and saying, well, I want to be a mouse. Conflict.
Now, I really like bees and they're super cool, but I've also watched The Fly recently, so that's out. Yeah. That's out.
You don't want to be a bee. Yes. Because you were recently traumatized.
Yes, I was recently traumatized by that movie specifically and many other horror movies because I have watched many of them this October.
Mm.
Like, of course, cats are great, but that's such a boring answer if you're not Jules.
Okay.
You have a deep connection to Cats 2019 that not many people have, so...
That's true.
I will be a bird because birds are dinosaurs, and I will be a very dangerous bird.
You could just say dinosaur.
Yeah, but birds are dinosaurs.
Yes, birds are dinosaurs. I will be a cassowary.
Ooh.
Let me Google that.
Sure, they look great and they're very dangerous.
I want to say the same thing because I have no idea how that bird looks.
Oh, okay.
Huh. Oh, they look awesome. And they really look like dinosaurs.
Yeah. You should take a look at their claws.
It is a very dope bird.
It looks kind of like a blue ostrich. It's wild.
I love animals. I love terrifying animals.
Well, I would not like to be a terrifying animal. Cat would be pretty nice because my coordination is shit. Like, I have to practice so much just to, like, get the tiniest bit of body coordination going. But, I mean, I like cats, but I would sleep all the time.
Yeah, that's fucking dope.
And I want to do shit.
Cats really do have a great life. Mm. Sleeping, eating, and getting petted. It's just, it's the shit.
I mean, to be honest, I can also do that as a human. But, you know, I haven't found the right environment for that yet.
You know what I like to be? I would like to be a otter hybrid because I really like water. I like diving, but I would not want to be a water person on land. So an otter, then I can just dive as long as I want. I like playing. And so I just can say, oh no, it's my otter genes that make me want to play all the time and find shiny things and crack them open with a little stone that I keep in my pocket. Yeah, I would totally be an otter.
That is cute.
Yeah, that's nice. That sounds good.
Yeah, sounds cute.
That is the most non-emotional response I've ever had to my persona. But I will take it.
I mean, you do you. I think it's really interesting that you want to be the animal that most lets you live the way you currently live already, like with an excuse for it. That's kind of fun.
let's go back to Dream Squad. Okay, Jules, what were you most looking forward to the players finding out? Like, what kind of thing did you say, ooh, I can't wait to see how they react to this and that?
Oh, man. One of the three massive plot twists. Which one? Probably the Starbolt's corpse thing. Mm. That's definitely the one where I was most looking forward to the reveal. Because there were, like, small hints for it all along. Sometimes when I try to develop an arc or an episode, I feel like there's something missing. And with Dream Squad, I had that for a while. I was kind of looking for the thing that, like, tied it all together. And I knew I wanted Astro Girl to be in Dream Squad, but I didn't know yet how to really fit her in. And when the idea of Doug Dreamer has the corpse of Starbolt came about, that was kind of what made the whole arc work and what made it all fit together. Because that would explain why you're looking for this geneticist who then turned into being the Gene Hackman when Dana introduced a backstory that would need, like, a supervillain geneticist. So it all fit together even better. That Astro Girl would also have been created by him. That Astro Girl was created from the genetics of Starbolt as an experiment to see how well they could replicate the powers. stuff like that, that all came about and started to fit together when the idea came about that Doug Dreamer has the body of Starbolt. But yeah, that was the thing that made the whole arc work. So getting to the point where I could reveal that and everybody was like, holy shit, that was great. That was amazing. I was very excited for that.
I do remember that we commented on this big plot point happening without Charlotte.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When did you get it? Because I think everyone on the call got it like about half a minute before the actual words were said.
I think it was also a, hold on, no, Jules wouldn't. Oh my god, Jules, no, Jules totally would. Oh my god, is Jules really gonna, oh my god, he really did, what the fuck? I think that was a pretty accurate representation of what was going through my head at the time. So yeah, I got it beforehand, but I'm Jules wouldn't just do that, or like, basically off screen without Charlotte there. And then you did.
I mean, Charlotte heard about it.
Speaking of, Luca also asks for the GM and the players, what were your favorite moments and or moments that surprised you most? I would say that one was pretty high on there on surprising moments.
Yeah, also the reveal that Transistor is...
Mm. Yeah, that would have been my most surprising. I didn't see that one coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one, I was like, what?
I think it's kind of fun because Dana super saw it coming.
Yes, Dana
which I think was fun because, like, that was one of the twists that was definitely, like, planned from episode one. And the funny thing about that one is just that I was worried it was too obvious. And apparently it wasn't, which was nice because, like, you know, we have this one other character who has the exact same powers as Max and... Who...
I just thought you wanted someone for like a mentor figure to make it really obvious which of the renegades you meant this as a mentor for.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it did go in that direction. I was glad because that like threw people off the trail, but also because like I think the characters work really well together. But yeah, that was definitely planned from the start.
Yeah, I think for me it was like that's not part of the backstory that I was invested in myself. Mm. Like, whenever people asked, I was just like, no, you know, Max just has a mother without super going into it. Like, I think it's very interesting because while I'm also not someone who puts, that much emphasis on biological connections, there is already a relationship they have here that gets super complicated because of it.
Yeah.
Mm. Also, a quick question. Does Transistor know?
Yeah, Jules, does Transistor know?
Now she does, I suppose.
I mean, yeah, it's put on the internet.
We haven't had it in plot yet, but my assumption is, I guess I can say it here because that isn't a big twist or anything. Transistor had no fucking idea. Transistor gave, you know, genetic material to this agency who gets people superhero children because she needed money because transition is expensive. And that is literally the last she heard about it. She has no idea. I mean, now she knows because now that information was leaked to the world.
It's going to be an interesting conversation.
Yeah. I can also just quickly say what was like a big surprising moment for me in Dream Squad as the game master. Because I think the thing that surprised me most and that was the most, oh, I did not think that we would be going there, is that the entire team basically immediately decided, okay, we're going to kill Doug Dreamer as soon as some stuff got revealed around that. Because I was genuinely thinking that the way we were going was probably to a split of the team. Where some people would be like, okay, we want to stop this altogether. And some people would be like, no, we want to defend the way things are or whatever. Like specifically Mr. Olympic. But no, it didn't go in that direction. It went to everybody decides, no, we have to stop this.
Yeah, Mr. Olympic got beaten down by the teenage kids.
Yeah.
Attachment to Becca and just absolutely getting dunked on by Max.
Yeah. Like to bring back the parallel to the Suicide Squad, I was thinking like in the movie The Suicide Squad that Mr. Olympic would kind of fill the peacemaker role in the finale, but no, did not go that way.
Well, he did have a lot of resentment building up.
Yeah. And we got to explore that a little.
Are there, apart from that, any other instances where the players' decisions threw you a curveball?
A couple times. I mean, that's the fun of Masks. The players, through their decisions, determine the plot and the plot adapts to them. Like, a few. Like, I remember in episode 2, where we just kind of like introduce all the members individually in their private lives. There were already a lot of things where I was like, oh, I didn't think this character would be going in that direction. I think ecstatic, threatening Becca kind of in that episode is something that I didn't see coming, but then I was like, oh, that's interesting. All right. Yeah, a lot of stuff in that direction. And specifically for the finale, there was just a lot of stuff where I was like, okay, let's see where the players go with this. I have contingencies in case this or that thing happens, but let's just see where you take that.
Every time Wacky transformed,
yeah. Oh, that those were a highlight for me too.
Yeah, I loved Wacky, and yeah. First of all, when Wacky got really, really hurt and the voice changed, that was amazing. It went from Five Nights at Freddy's horror to complete body horror Wacky was out of the suit. That was so amazing. And that looked fucking fantastic in my head.
Oh, yeah. So props to Tess for like describing the entire thing, because I got shivers.
Yeah.
Tess should really get to play more. Hint, nudge, nudge.
Yeah, I was sitting there in the edit and being like, oh, Tess describes Wacky again. Pick out some horror music.
So I think my first favorite moment is when we had that whole thing of Troubledo jumping on Max in the beginning.
Yeah.
That was extremely funny and already like cemented a relationship there. That was so funny.
That was great.
To be honest, one of my favorite moments was actually the talk show scene like in the very beginning. And just Luca throwing out these like professional responses that were like, a media trained person might not get those perfect of responses. And he just threw them out there top of his dome. That was amazing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think my favorite character moment was the one between Becca and Max in the break room.
That was so sweet.
Yeah, that was a really nice one. And also, like, that changed the relationship from hostile to, you know, actually being nice to each other, maybe. And of course, when the dinosaur showed up. Love a dinosaur.
Dinosaurs are always great.
Oh, I just remembered another favorite moment of mine is when you split up on the beach, and then there's this scene where Troubledo and Astro Girl sit down for a chat while in the background, like, a fish person is beaten to death. That one was very fun and very visual in my mind.
Can I just say, what I also really liked was that there was a through line of question of identity, especially with, you know, Becca having a lot of trouble with what was, you know, done to her and who she is now and all of that. And, you know, also Wacky, who completely lost its body and everything. And I think that's also very fitting with Max changing his pronouns and just thinking about yourself and your identity a little bit more and just realizing something about yourself, because other people have asked these questions. And yeah, I really like that.
Yeah, I will also say, when I actually knew what everyone was playing, I was so happy for that, because like the core idea of Dream Squad was that it would be an arc for Max, essentially, to look back at his life in Dreamland and to like show where Max could be going. And the characters were perfect for that, because Becca is someone who is very similar to Max in a lot of ways, but earlier in development. Mr. Olympic is a great example of what Max could have been. Troubledo is like much more chaotic, but has the same background of this kind of child star life that Max is living, but went in a fully different direction of just not giving a fuck about anything as a result of it. And Wacky is great.
Yes, Wacky is just all around great.
You could argue that like Wacky is the part of Max that feels like there is no person inside and just the superhero, like someone who whose entire life has become this persona instead of like being a person in their own right.
The thing is, I've always played Max as being still drawn to Wacky despite like the appearance, and like I think one of those reasons was also that there was a part of Max that was reminded a little bit of Moon, in that Wacky is like not part of the humanity of it all, but still, you know, wanting to connect to Wacky that way, and also knowing that Wacky is one of the people who fucking hate Dreamland too.
So Mimi, something that I was wondering, I know you've hinted all throughout Waypoint's run that Max's pronouns would probably change in the future. What made you decide to do it now?
It's a little bit what I said in that conversation with Rex, that it's like a new beginning. And it's this new beginning with ties to Dreamland completely severed. And it's like leaving your old life behind so you can start something new. Like, a lot of it also did have to do with the characters in the Dream Squad. Like, this whole identity thing has been a problem for Max for a long time, but there was never any room to explore it. And I think with the people from the Dream Squad, who even in Dreamland managed to be themselves in many ways, I think that was a huge part of it, and also just being free of his mother. That was probably one of the biggest reasons that there is no connection to that anymore. No need to fulfill somehow the mother's expectations and stuff like that.
That makes total sense.
I found it interesting that so many of the characters got connected to her.
Yeah, she's just an important person.
Like, at the end, Mr. Olympic just making a pact with Beatrix Powers to, hey, do you want to, you know, take over the government?
I am curious to see where that is going.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of, Jules, will we see any of the Dream Squad members again?
Yes.
Okay, that is a clear yes. I like it.
Short answer, yes.
Do you want to elaborate on that?
No, I will not. That is something you'll find out.
We fucking better.
Okay. JPG also asks, in your headcanons, what do you think happens to the characters after the events of the run? So I think we've all pretty much agreed that Mr. Olympic is going to climb the corporate / governmental ladder.
It's the same thing, yeah.
Mr. Olympic for president!
Wacky lives. Wacky lives. Wacky's not dead.
Wacky can't die.
Wacky lives.
At least I want, you know, a big internet following for Wacky. At least its memory will live on.
And there's a whole bunch of conspiracy theories about how Wacky is definitely still alive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Wacky just completes its transformation into a cryptid and is only seen sometimes in the forest at night.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, I'm not sure what's cooler, that like the horror version of Wacky is like the person that will protect you when you walk down an alleyway, like a Batman style, putting fear into the criminals of Dreamland, or if it's like the boogeyman, don't go out at night because Wacky will get you.
I'm still so glad that I got people to record everything there, because that twist with, you know, like Wacky being filmed, just the dead corpse.
Yeah,
just so terrible.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, like headcanon, I'd say we know what Dana and Troubledore are up to now. They're going to try to undo what's been done to Dana with the Gene Hackman. Mm. I don't even want to say, like, that's the thing. When I make up a headcanon, it's canon. That's the joke, right? But also, that's not true, because it constantly changes based on the demands of the plot. And, like, where the plot is going, where the players are going, that completely changes what's actually happening. And I genuinely have things that I say I'm not going to think about that, because I don't want to settle on anything. And when the right time comes, that can always come back. So maybe the Gene Hackman was lying, you know? Maybe he is planning on betraying them as soon as he gets the opportunity. Maybe he genuinely wants to redeem himself for what he's done. All of that is absolutely up in the air, but I think we know what they're going to do next. I think I already hinted pretty clearly at what Astro Girl's up to next. And I'm very much looking forward to that somehow coming back into the plot. And yeah, that's most of the team, right? Wacky is a cryptid. Astro Girl is off to new adventures. Mr. Olympic is climbing the ranks. And Troubledore and Becca are working on genetics. And Max is, I don't know, I have no idea where Max is going.
We'll see.
We'll see. Like, at one point, there will be like a newscaster in the background or something. We will find out. So, speaking of Luca, he asks a very important question. When did Mimi decide Max was gonna kill Dreamer? And when did Max decide that? That is a question I really want to know, because that is a very drastic step in the development of our podcast, I think.
See, when Wacky was killed, it was like, Dreamer needs to die. Like, for me, as the player, I think it was that moment where it became clear that no one else would kill Dreamer. Like, the necessity of him being gone, combined with everyone else was just doing something else. So Max probably just felt like it was on him now.
Like, someone's gotta do it, no one else is doing it.
Yeah, and I think it was that thing of, I hope someone else does it, but then no one did, so...
I think we will grapple with the fallout from that decision for a while.
Yes.
Let's see where that goes.
Yeah, I actually like to also ask a question here. Like, what did you as the players and the game master think in that moment, not your characters?
I mean, I can certainly go first because I think Moon's reaction was pretty similar to mine reaction. Like, I was live tweeting at the time, so you do get a glimpse about what I was thinking. And I was so sure, like, I was 100% certain Max wasn't going to through with it. And no, Mimi wouldn't. Like, this is a very, very hard line. And, like, I think, like, we know that someone has to kill her, but, like, there's a difference between, like, oh, no, he died in a battle and just coldly boiling his head alive. And I was like, no, surely not. No way is Mimi actually going to do that. And then you did, and I was just like, holy shit, how am I going to deal with this? I think I actually had to pause for a second to get my thoughts in order to actually, like, type out a live tweet reply. Like, again, I was sitting in a train at the time. So I was sitting there next to a bunch of lightly drunk people who were going to the Swabian version of Oktoberfest. Mm-hmm. And I was just sitting there like, holy shit, this will change everything. But yeah, I was just taken aback because for me, that marked a very clear change in the direction of the podcast and the characters. And so far, like I said, it has been pretty PG, apart from, like, the body horror. But the entire question of, like, should we cross the kill or no kill line? And for me and for Moon, it was pretty clear that, like, as long as it's possible in any way, we would avoid that. And that Max did it in such a calculated and cold manner that went against everything I thought the podcast was like, the direction we were going for. I knew it was going to happen sooner or later. Like, at some point, Jules would make us face this decision, especially since, like, the entire Waypoint universe is a pretty crapsack world, if you think about it, and we do. So I knew this was coming, but I didn't expect it at that point.
People keep forgetting that Charlotte beat the Alpha Gamer's head to pulp. People keep forgetting that.
Oops.
Like, at that point, I was hoping that we could get into it a bit more, but then so much other stuff happened that it got sort of got lost. But I remember that point, and I was thinking about how is Moon going to handle this? Who can they actually talk to about this? And I was thinking Moon wouldn't go to Charlotte. Because, of course, Charlotte is, like, the most heroic person they know, but there have been two instances in the last arc where Charlotte almost lost control and killed someone.
Might also be why Charlotte has a lot more, like, sympathy for Max's actions there.
Yeah. But yeah, that was my thought and emotional journey when hearing that. What about you, Sunny?
I mean, on the one hand, I was like, yes, Max, kill him. And on the other hand, I was like, oh no, Max, this is going to be so hard to deal with. But also, you know, Dreamer is a terrible person and directly responsible for a lot of people's pain. So, you know, in a fictional setting, I was like, yes, I'm not advocating for murder.
Yes, King, get him.
But yeah, it was definitely a big step, and I was just mostly excited for what's to come, you know. It has big ramifications, and it's gonna be really interesting to play all of that out. And yeah, and just you know, from a narrative standpoint, it was really cool to have this big thing happening. Yeah, I mean, that was a reason why they all decided to kill Dark Dreamer. So I can't say I was opposed to it. But definitely it made things very interesting. So I was just mostly excited, but also very concerned for Max, because it's not easy to deal with.
I honestly don't know if I had any thoughts about where that would go. Because, like, when we went into that final episode, there was definitely the idea of killing Dreamer, but also Max was the one who originally said, maybe we shouldn't.
Yes.
More for political reasons, probably. But yeah, I was thinking if someone does it, it's probably going to be either Wacky or Mr. Olympic. But Wacky was gone by that point. Like, what I thought is either he's gonna die here. What I thought was more likely is that he's not gonna die, but that you, like, get some kind of deal out of him, which is kind of something that in this episode almost happened. But I definitely also had stuff prepared for what might happen if he does survive all of this. And things could have been very different.
The thing is, I think him trying to make a deal is what sealed his fate. Mm. Like, trying to buy his life instead of at least pretending to feel bad and, like, be sorry. Because then I think there was a possibility of him being spared. Mm. But the deal sort of just sealed his fate. That was just a thing of, yes, he's never gonna change.
Yeah. There was, like, small hints towards the end of, like, some humanity with Dark Dreamer, but he definitely was much more bad than good. Like, I tried to go in a direction a little bit with him where the one thing he did feel bad about was Becca and, like, what had happened to Becca. He hints at that a few times and he's, like, somewhat protective of her. But, yeah, ultimately, not much redeeming there. So, yeah. I didn't necessarily see it coming, but I was definitely prepared for it.
Yeah, like, I definitely also had in my mind that it would either be Mr. Olympic or Wacky killing him, but then both of them were sort of out, and then it was a thing of, I guess I'm gonna do this. Because none of the others would.
Yeah. And it's much more interesting if Max did it, because Max is gonna stick around with the main cast.
That is true. Mm.
I definitely didn't plan for Dream Squad to be Max's corruption arc. That is absolutely a reason it ultimately kind of went into, but that was not the intention.
I keep saying, like, you guys during recording said, oh, this is gonna be Max's villain origin story. And I was like, ha ha ha, you jokesters. And then I listened to the episode and I was like, oh my god, you were not kidding. What the fuck?
Now see, what I'm super looking forward to is now the relationship between Black Hole and Max.
Mm, mm-hmm.
Because, like, there's obviously still a lot of resentment there for, you know, Black Hole trying to kill aesthetic reasons.
Yes.
But I feel like now Max might be much more interesting to Black Hole than before.
If it helps, Black Hole didn't want to kill Max for personal reasons. It just happened, you know?
I don't think that helps, though.
One important question that Luca has asked is, are we sure that Dark Dreamer is dead? Could there be a server bank somewhere with a backup of his mind, or a young, charming clone posing as a secret love child, or like a version of him plucked from the past? Like, are we sure he's really gone?
Who knows? Nobody knows. I can't say anything on that. Who knows?
Damn it.
I mean, there's definitely the possibility of getting a dreamer bot in the future, I guess, instead of pretending that he's still alive.
Yeah, I mean, like, AI recreation of Dark Dreamer so they can make up stuff for him to say as royal decrees or something. That one is definitely already happening.
Yeah, that's just a deep fake of him.
Yeah.
Okay, then I guess, Jules, maybe we'll answer this question from Tess. What was Dark Dreamer's ultimate endgame? Was he happy with just being the leader of Dreamland, or was he trying to branch out?
That's a good question. I don't actually think that Dark Dreamer was going for world domination or anything like that. He's definitely not that kind of character. Dark Dreamer's end goal, at least in Dream Squad, was immortality and living a comfortable existence for all eternity.
It feels like he's a huge control freak.
Yeah.
Which is why, you know, he tried to control Dreamland in the way he did, and, like, death as the ultimate thing you cannot control was something he really wanted to overcome.
Yeah, and I think he'd rather have a Dreamland that he has complete control over than a world that he has to keep under his thumb with much effort.
That makes sense. Especially since, like, that would be very hard to keep up.
I think his end goal more than world domination is probably being, like, the richest man alive or something like that. Like, his goals are much more economic than, like, worldwide domination.
Hmm. I have two questions left that I want to ask about Dream Squad. Both are very important. But the most important for me is, Mimi, when will Max finally go and seek out therapy?
Very important, yes.
Well, you see, therapy is expensive.
And we don't have money anymore, so...
We don't have money. I mean, you know, we do have Dr. Supergirl somewhere. Maybe something will come up there. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, listen, don't get me wrong. Max definitely needs it. Absolutely.
That's just, you know, when you have time for that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you do have an empath/telepath who knows nothing about human psychology, so and also who is kind of very ambivalent about Max and his choices right now. So I guess it's just going to be a socially awkward Enoch or a Rex who will support you in any way and any shape. Or, you know, Transistor.
One of your moms.
Yes. Man, like, can Max just have one relationship that is not complicated? Well, I guess Rex is pretty straightforward.
I'm genuinely looking forward to a scene with Transistor that is definitely coming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's going to be really good.
I mean, I've already talked to Jules a bit about Max's feelings on the subject, so that will be interesting.
And I think, I don't know if that's a surprise, but those are kind of not one-sided, those feelings.
Yeah, makes sense.
Okay, last question on Dream Squad that I have written down. Are there any plans for solo arcs for Charlotte and Moon?
Okay, long story short, there were. Actually, the plan was less solo arcs and more focused arcs. Because Dream Squad, if I remembered correctly, the original idea was that the whole team would go to Dreamland, which then changed over time. Mm-hmm. But the idea was to have basically three arcs, one right after the other, each focusing on one of the team members. But after the first two arcs didn't fully shake out like that, it became more of a one-time thing. Like, the idea was for a third arc, which was the Black Hole Returns arc, to be the Charlotte arc. Then the magic arc would be the Moon arc, where Moon learns about magical powers and stuff like that. And then the third arc would be the Max arc, which is Dream Squad, or the Dreamland arc, whatever it would have been. We gave Charlotte and Moon their individual episodes during Dream Squad, and that was kind of the balance. I don't think I can organize another Dream Squad in the near future. It was a lot of fun, but it was also a lot of effort. And I don't think that's going to happen, these other big individual arcs for the other characters. I never know what the future holds, but at least it's not in the cards right now.
All right. Do you guys have any more questions about anything Dream Squad related?
Sam wants to know whether Robin is still in prison.
That's in the category of it's going to be revealed when it's relevant.
Yeah, that's what I said.
My current idea is yes, that is subject to change, but mainly because Astro Girl showing up at the prison and Robin and Black Hole being there sounds fun to me.
Yeah.
But open to change.
All right. Then I have some questions from Twitter that we've been asked. At WaypointPod is where you can ask those questions if you have any more. Like Twitter user I Am Happy Tacos, who has asked the following. Since absorbing the world's knowledge, what is Ship's least favorite thing about Earth? Because we all know what its favorite thing is.
That is true, yeah.
That's a good question, I don't know. Do you know, Vio?
I would say probably the entire discussion about AI.
Yeah.
As an artificial intelligence that comes from a world where they are pretty widespread, like hearing the paranoia and fear that is going around in culture and pop culture, I think Ship would not appreciate the Terminator movies and stuff like that.
I'd actually be going in a different direction with the same idea. I'd say what Ship is the most annoyed about is that people call fucking everything AI right now.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, it is not. Yeah.
Like, a lot of these things have nothing to do with AI. Like, what are you talking about?
They are just algorithms that steal.
Yeah. This is literally just, it's the cool word of the day. This has nothing to do with AI. This is technology that's existed for forever. We just call it AI now because it sounds futuristic. Like, if you call something AI, it better be actual AI.
Yeah.
None of this shit is actually intelligent. I am intelligent. I know this.
I don't have feelings, but I'm intelligent.
Yeah. I don't feel anything about it, obviously. I just think it's annoying and I hate it. That's all.
Yes.
This is a purely sentience-based fact that has nothing to do with emotions in any way, shape, or form.
Just sapience, no sentience. Exactly.
All right. This Twitter user also asks, since Sunny, unfortunately, you had to miss our last Q&A session, which has been quite a while ago.
Yeah.
I didn't look it up, but it has been quite a bit. They wanted to know if you could have, you, Sunny, could have superpowers, what would they be?
Probably being able to learn every language.
Mm, interesting.
That existed and those who still exist.
Super linguistic powers. You can just speak every language.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yes. That would be very cool.
Like, know them, speak them, know the culture around it.
Yes, because, you know, languages always depend on culture. One of my professors once said that if you know all the words and all the grammar, you still only know half of the language. Because you also need to learn how the words are used and, you know, sayings and all of that. And that always depends on culture.
I Am Happy Tacos also asked for GMing advice. There's no more info about what kind of advice they're asking for, but just in general, what would you say is like the most concise or best advice?
I mean, I can start as the GM of Waypoint. I'm going to say make less notes. No, that's the thing that I see the most from people who like DM for the first time. And that can be very intimidating to starting to DM or GM it for the first time. The idea that you need to have everything figured out and know all eventualities. This is like a personal example because someone came to me with that question recently about GMing. Imagine you have a door that is magically locked. And it's like the finale of the plot. The plot is about trying to find a way to unlock that door of like a short adventure. And the question came up, this was specifically from D&D, but that goes for other stuff too. What if the players have an option to just disable magic? Like the players have an ability that allows them to disable magic. How do I make this door work so players can't do that? And I think that thought process is something that is something you probably mostly have as a starting game master. Because especially if your experiences come from something like video games, you often get in with the idea of like, okay, I have no idea what my players can do, so I have to be prepared for every eventuality. And you don't. You absolutely don't. If you make it clear to your players, this doesn't work here, that's enough. You don't need a complex explanation. It can be, you try it and then you give like some sort of explanation for why it doesn't work. You can come up with that in the moment. And ultimately your players will be fine with you saying, this is the finale. Do you have to actually do the plot? Like you don't have to think about them like they're thousands of players who will play your game that you're putting out into the world. It's a group of like 3 to 5 people that you know personally and who will understand. You don't need to think about every eventuality. It's going to fix itself in the moment. That's the best advice that I can give.
I would like to add to that with the entire idea of GMing being like, don't think of solution, just present your players with a problem and they will figure it out. And if they don't, they will talk about ideas to figure it out. And if you notice they're really, really stuck, they can't find any way to do that, just make one of their plans work. If they have like 5 ideas to storm this very heavily guarded castle, but they can't decide on anything, just make up an NPC who gives them like an idea or something. Because in the end, planning stuff can be a lot of fun for players, but if they get the feeling that nothing they do would actually work, just throw them a bone. Like you don't have to figure out everything they might do. Just listen to them and see what they think they might do. And if you like the idea, then say, yeah, sure. You know what? I would never have thought about this idea, but I see you guys like it, so I'm going to make it work for you.
And if they have a good idea that they don't then pursue, you can always just hint them in the direction of, yeah, that's a good idea. Continue that further. There's many options. Something that I really like is just have an NPC there. Just have the option of having an NPC there who can, in the moment, tell them, that sounds pretty good, but what if that happens? So they keep on going on that path.
Yeah. And in general, I would just say, listen to your players. I know this is a very vague thing and something that I struggle with a lot and I'm actually like practicing. Just see what they think about, what they like, what jokes they laugh at, what kind of NPCs they like to interact with, and give them more of that. I mean, you can't just make it like really clinically if you're still unsure about how and what you want to do with that. Just make a note on the character sheet of your NPC. They liked him. Or don't do this accent anymore. Or stuff like that. Just see what lands and what doesn't. And if it doesn't land, just move on. This is not a movie that they're going to watch like 10 times over and every single time the scene comes up, they're going to skip it. This is a one-time thing. And there will be so much more happening in your adventure that they will completely forget about that one time you made a problematic choice or you had to retcon something because you got lost in the moment or something like that. Don't overthink it.
You can always retcon stuff. That is also important. You can always just say, hey, that thing that happened last time, it happened this way instead. I made a mistake. It's done.
Odds are they're not going to remember anyway because no one is taking fucking notes. At least not in my circles. I'm always the one taking notes.
By you making notes, you taught us the wrong lesson that we should.
Yes, exactly. It's now my turn. I'm also a GM sometimes. I think when it comes to preparation, what you should prepare is your world.
Mm.
But for the adventure, it is a lot about thinking of challenges, thinking of what could go wrong. As was said before, less the solutions. But if you have the world prepared, you always have something to fall back on. You might have, for example, a few NPCs you can bring in. Or sometimes it's just you have to improvise what happens next. And if you have a clear idea of your world, or like in Masks, for example, the genre of your world, as in a superhero one, then it makes it easier to decide what is going to happen next, because you can just go, what would happen in a comic? And that's why it's important to also talk about it with your players, like what kind of world do they want to play in, and then you can develop that together, you can put stuff in yourself. What is always a hit with the players is bringing stuff back that they thought was inconsequential. Like little decisions, sometimes people, something they didn't think would have an impact, because maybe it was made up in the moment, maybe it didn't seem important, but it's always like nice to get the reactions when you actually do bring stuff like that back. So be careful about mysteries.
Yeah.
If you have a mystery that requires the characters to get clues to go forward in the story, that can be a huge problem, because some shit they're just not gonna find. So it's always best to prepare the story in a way that stuff escalates even if the characters do nothing. Mm. Because then they can always jump into the story. That's how I construct most of my adventures, that I just have a clear image of what happens if no one interferes. Like, it just keeps on escalating, and depending on how the characters do interfere with that, it'll change, obviously. But there's always something happening, whether the players find something or not.
Mm.
Also, if you do really want them to get a clue, you have to have at least 3 hints towards the clue. Like, each piece of information should have at least 3 hints they can find, because most of them, they are not going to find.
If I can just quickly jump in there, because I recently did a mystery one-shot. One thing that I found worked for me was, I know what happened there, obviously, and just knowing what information do they need to figure it out, and then just don't decide in advance, oh, this is the room where if they roll correctly, they will find the locket. Say they need to get this information, and then just adjust where and how they find it based on what the players do. If they simply did roll badly when searching a room, give them an NPC who will tell them what they would have found. Give them a note they find somewhere else, a diary, something. But you don't have to plan out like where in the house which kind of hints can be found. Just find out which information do they need to find to solve the mystery, and then just pepper it in wherever you need to.
As long as it's satisfying, it doesn't really matter like how they got it. The important thing is it needs to feel like they actually worked for it, or like something dramatic happened to get it.
And also never think, oh, this is so obvious, I have to make it harder.
Yeah.
Yeah, never ever think that.
Listen, even if it is obvious in play, it's usually not. And there's still satisfaction in finding it.
Yeah.
Like, finding a clue in and of itself is already satisfactory.
Yeah. Like, solving a mystery in any way is still cool, no matter how hard it was. If you notice all the clues are too easy, then just give them complications that aren't based on clues. Give them an NPC who will actually prevent them from going into that part of the house. Or like in a random encounter, if nothing else springs to mind. But yeah, mysteries are hard.
Also quickly add, because we were talking about bringing back characters before and bringing back stuff that happened at some point. And that's like a lesson that I learned while making Waypoint, for the most part, is if you get to a point where the plot demands that someone shows up and you think like, you know, this new character would fit the bill, always think, do I need a new character for this? Because you want to expand your world, but you also, and this is like a big important part that you learn if you DM for a while, you might be in love with that one character you made. Your players forget it in 3 weeks. Bringing stuff back can be very useful in like actually having an NPC matter. Because I personally can't remember NPCs I've met like 2 months ago. But if that NPC showed up again, I will remember that character.
Yeah.
I ask myself this question a lot of the time. The big thing I keep thinking about is in the magic arc, when 2 SOS members show up to meet you, basically. Or like at the end, where a few SOS members help you fight at the news building. The question that I always ask myself here is, okay, we have some pre-established characters. We can always expand, but there should always be at least one character you already know there who can be like a reference point. Like, in the first place, it's Dr. Supergao, who is there with a new character, Sky Knight. In the second place, it's Incent and Transistor are both there with other characters. It's a thing where, like, you can always strengthen your characters by bringing them back. And introducing new characters is great, but don't introduce a new character just for the sake of introducing them. If an old character can fit the bill, always think, could I just use that old character?
Yeah, that's a very good advice.
If you have a problem, just say that you have a problem and you either need a minute or just ask your group what they think could happen next. Like, that's something I do a lot when roles fail or are bad or there's a complication. I literally just ask, so what do you think can go wrong here? What do you think can happen here? Like, that's a small thing. And I feel like it also doesn't feel to the players like you're saying, I have a problem coming up with something. Because it just feels like getting the players in on it, saying, hey, we tell the story together, so let's see what happens here with your character. But you can always take a minute. You can always ask them. Just talk to them. You don't have to be perfect.
Yeah, like when I'm a player, I'm definitely... My style is very much I will cause problems on purpose. And like when I do that, I want consequences. I want things to happen. And the game master asking me, okay, what do you want to happen here, is a great way for me to like help develop that. Yeah. So it can also be very satisfying.
Yeah. Yes. Like getting the player input on the world and especially NPCs they might know is also very cool for them. And it makes your job easier because you have to think less.
It also gives them more power over the world.
As Mimi said, when you have problems, say, okay, guys, I was not expecting this. Let's take a minute, get some more snacks, and I'll be right back.
I mean, I haven't DM'd. I am terrified of it.
I mean, listen, you can say maybe like the positive or good things you've noticed about other people. That's also an interesting perspective.
Yeah. I mean, I think the most important thing is to remember that this is collaborative and you're telling a story together. Yeah, as Mimi also said, if the GM has a problem, then just ask the players what they want to happen. And I always really, really like that because it makes me feel very involved. Like, I'm part of telling the story and I'm not just doing what the GM tells me to do. So yeah, I think that's super, super important.
One more little thing and I swear then we'll stop. One thing that Mimi does that I really, really enjoy is between sessions, they always ask, is there anything you want to happen next session, like with your character? Do you want a scene with another character? Do you want something specific that you want from your next session? And that is something that I very, very much like and will definitely incorporate into my own GMing style.
Yeah, that's very nice.
Because it gives the characters a lot more freedom to say, oh, yeah, actually, I would like to visit this one character and talk to them. Or I would like to have some kind of thing with my backstory because I feel I haven't had anything to do with it for a while. That really helps the GM out in planning a session as well.
I remember when the only thing I wanted to happen was that my character punches Jules' character. And then I failed the role so bad.
No.
But yeah, I've also texted a lot with Jules about Waypoint and saying like, hey, can we do that? Can we do that? I think it's also very nice for the players to just give feedback at the end and say, wow, that was really awesome.
Yeah, especially when it's a group you haven't played much with.
Yeah.
That can be very helpful, especially because of that thing that Vio said earlier, I think, about like figure out what works with the group and what doesn't work with the group. You can just tell the game master, this is what really worked for me. This is what didn't work for me as much, which is very helpful.
Do you want more fights? Do you want less fights?
Like a good game master will respond to criticism, good and bad.
Oh, and also an important thing, especially when you start out with a new group, to talk about stuff that you really, really do not want to happen.
Yeah.
Have a session zero.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. Just, you know, some people have triggers and we should all be on one page.
Like, if you already know all the members of the group from like other stuff, you can be a bit lax on that. But with new players, definitely have a session zero every single time.
Yeah.
And always the possibility to stop a scene.
Yeah.
Like midway, if it hits anything that is not great.
Yeah.
And make sure your players know that they can do that. People have had good and bad experiences in their RPG life. And we've all heard the stories or even been there, like the horror stories about power-hungry players or GMs. And don't assume that people will speak up if they have a problem. Make it clear either in a session zero or like at the beginning of a session, guys, if there's anything coming up, you can talk to me. Make sure your players know that they can come to you with their thoughts, feelings, and feedback. Speaking of tough questions, we have one from Twitter user EvitableFate who asks, what would drive your characters, including Shep, to become villains? This will be interesting. I think with Max, it might be a bit more obvious right now than with other characters.
Max isn't a villain yet.
No. I feel like the answer would be, though, like just a disillusionment with the world and that it can be better. Like at this point, Max still thinks that he can change the world for the better. And I think if that ever just disappears, then that is true villain arc.
And what would make that disappear? Like what would you think would happen that would drive Max to say, you know what, fuck this, I'm gonna go to the dark side?
Wait, I'm gonna grab my notebook.
Speaking of player input. I think, you know, having the team and people in the team who Max counts as real heroes, or, you know, outside of the team, real heroes that are not just confined to capitalism.
Which is the main villain in our entirely apolitical podcast.
Exactly. I think that would be a huge problem if, you know, these people just disappeared.
I can see that.
Yeah. The thing is, Max does not, like, idolize a specific hero. It was always a thing of, I look at all the heroes and basically pick out what each one does best. So I don't think it's tied to one person, really. But it would definitely hit hard for someone close to him that he sees as a hero to turn out to be, you know, just as shit as the others.
Sunny, what do you think?
I think for Charlotte, it's gonna be revenge. If something really bad happens to someone she loves, she's gonna get revenge and it's gonna get very ugly. I think that would be the only thing that would turn her really evil or, you know, into a villain, because otherwise she's very much like, I am going to do my best to make the world a better place and I want to be a hero, I want to make a difference. But if it's something very personal that hurts her a lot, yeah, I think that's the biggest thing.
I would not like an angry speedster coming after me. I think for Moon, I think it could be two things. One that is similar in like direction that Sunny just said. Like Moon does not have many connections to Earth outside of their team. So if anything would happen to their team, say if someone were kidnapped and they knew about it, they would go batshit. I don't care what's going on. Earth, this isn't my home anyway. I will do anything for my friends. The other thing I could think of that's a bit more like big picture would be, Moon comes from a culture where they just assume they're better than everyone else. Right now, Moon is so fascinated with humanity and what they can offer that they would never think about imposing the like Emtila culture on them. But if they come to the point where they realize, oh, everyone being different and everyone doing their own thing without regard for each other is actively hurting this entire civilization, and just saying, you know what, if you just see it my way, then everything will be better, which can be extremely ethically dangerous with a telepath who could, or empath who can actually manipulate your thoughts and emotions.
When going for world domination.
Not for world domination, but just I'm going to start manipulate the people to do things the way I think would be right. If I just force the people on the Waypoint Council to do certain things, then everything will be better and will just be a tiny white little crime. And I think that is the path that Moon might go down in becoming a villain, just being fed up with not having influence enough to change things and starting influencing people in their own minds.
I think for Shep, it's just the classic evil AI stuff. It's either like the, free will is a problem and I have to blah, blah, blah. Either that or like hostile takeover of the systems, turning the knob from good to evil, something like that. The classic evil AI stuff.
Just something breaking in Moon's very haphazard building of shit that just, oops, I turned the emotional regulators off They don't exist, obviously.
Fun fact, there were early ideas to have a quasi-ship villain arc.
Ooh.
But, like, not really villain. The idea was, originally, the idea was that ship has been sending information home all along thing would be a bigger deal. But that's just not where it developed. So that was never, like, a big thing. The idea was like, oh, no, the ship that I built actually sent information back all along. I can't trust it or whatever. But it was just like, yeah, I guess it did. It's not that big a deal, honestly.
Dude, Moon comes from a culture where everyone knows everything about everyone.
Yeah, no, that's how it developed. So that wasn't like a big thing anymore. So it wasn't a big thing in plot either.
Yeah. All right, I have one more question from the Twitter user RD Warp, who asks, what's your favorite comic book hero and favorite song? And that goes for both the cast and our characters.
Oh.
So, I don't know if I want to ask Jules and Mimi first because they have the most comic book experience or last because they have to think more.
Just ask us last.
I mean, I can start. I mean, Charlotte's favorite superhero is Starbolt.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Charlotte's favorite song. Probably something like really cool and just enthusiastic song. And maybe it's Final Countdown by Europe. Oh, God.
Daring.
All right.
And, well, my favorite superhero as Sanya is definitely, if we can count him as a superhero, John Constantine.
Yeah, he counts. Come on. We all love John Constantine.
He counts.
Or Constantine, depending on how you pronounce it. It changes every time.
Yeah.
And my favorite song is High Hopes by Pink Floyd.
Nice.
Hmm.
Yeah, Pink Floyd has a lot of good music, and I think that one album, The Division Bell, is always overlooked, and High Hopes is just really, really good.
Man, for Moon, that's a very hard question because all the superheroes they know they have met. So I would say in general, Moon's favorite superhero would be Max. Right now, I'm not so sure about it. At this point in the plot, I would say clearly Max. Favorite song?
An ad jingle.
It would either be like a super like overplayed song that just gets stuck in your head, or it would be like a super niche like Icelandic hip-hop throat-singing combo or something that no one has ever heard that Chip happened to find and say, hey, do you like this? Oh my God, this is the best thing ever. Either this or like the most just four chords and repeat catchy tune that comes on the radio way too often.
Oh my God, when Charlotte and Max have a song stuck in their head, Moon automatically has that as well, right?
Yep, or the other way around.
Oh man, earworm sharing, that's awful.
Oh yeah. As for me, I must admit that I am not much versed in the comic book hero world. I would have said John Constantine too, because that's one of the only comics I've read a long time of. You know, the comics that I read most are actually like the DuckTales comics. I've read a lot of those when I was a wee little lass. Like Donald Duck's superhero persona, I always loved him. The Duck Avenger.
Yeah.
I know this might be weird, but yeah, I'm going to go with that.
That's fair. Very fair.
No, that's an amazing answer.
Favorite song is quite hard for me. But I guess the song that I never skip when it comes on is Flight by Lifehouse. I just like the tone and the building and the message. Ooh. I love it a lot. How about you, Jules?
I'm just going to go for Will as my in-universe character. Will's favorite superhero is no one. Will doesn't like superheroes. Will's favorite superhero is probably Ryan, if we have any. And Will's favorite song is Behind Blue Eyes by Limp Bizkit. Absolutely. Aww. As for me, the interesting thing is my top 10 superheroes are like 9 out of 10 are DC heroes, but number 1 might be a Marvel hero. It's basically up in the air between Blue Beetle and Kamala Khan, Ms. Marvel. Like Jaime Reyes, Blue Beetle, and Kamala Khan, Ms. Marvel. Both teen heroes, and both of which I love deeply. I think it's probably Blue Beetle, but Ms. Marvel is definitely up there. Definitely the most fun I've had reading like an ongoing series, Ms. Marvel. At least until they did a crossover with Civil War 2 that just wrecked all the characters because crossovers are the bane of comic books. As for my favorite song, that is very difficult. It's probably Last of the Wilds by Nightwish, but there's like a lot of options there. I have a very like erratic taste in music that goes in like all directions, but I really like Last of the Wilds.
Mimi?
All right, so Jules, what do you think the first superhero was that had, like, lightning or electricity powers?
Well, the first one that Max knew about, or the first one in general?
The first one that would be, like, Starbolt era.
It's probably something like, I don't know, the Living Dynamo or something. Some classic-sounding name.
Yeah, it would probably be that one. I feel like it might not even be a super well-known one, but, you know, Max probably has a lot of obscure superhero knowledge. So yeah, it would be someone like that, I think. Which is probably a good thing, because current ones, idolizing them seems like a bad idea.
Tell your darlings.
Yeah.
I don't think Max sees music as something that you emotionally connect to.
Aww.
I think, like, growing up in Dreamland, it's very much so commercialized and devoid of emotion in many ways that it would be just background noise, which, like, literally where he grew up, background noise, music all the time.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Understandable.
Yeah. So I don't think that Max ever, like, genuinely connected to music in the way that you would have to have a favorite song. I have a hard time choosing a favorite superhero, mostly because I rarely like just the superhero. I mostly like the group they're in, or like the connections they have to other people. I really like the Bat Family, for example, but I wouldn't say that Batman is my favorite superhero. Like, I also enjoyed the Legends of Tomorrow TV show stuff a lot. I wouldn't say that any of these superheroes are my favorite, but I love them as a group and what they are with each other. So I don't think I can answer the question what my favorite superhero is, because it always depends and it constantly changes.
So Mimi, favorite song?
I'm just going to say the song that I listen most to recently, and, like, I will probably forget about it in a few months, but that's just what music is with me. Then I discover it in 3 years again. So yes, it would be The Mariner's Revenge by the Decemberists right now. Very cool song.
All right, so we've been through exactly all the questions that I have right now. I have one more thing that was asked specifically of me, but I would like to open it to all of you. Since in our tweet asking for questions, I said as an example to ask us about our pets, the Crumpet has asked, I would like specifically to know more about Vio's cat. So I will now talk about my cat.
Yes.
Because she's a little shithead, sometimes murderous, mood-swinging furball, and I love her to pieces. Her name is Clinus, which translates to tiny, basically, because she was very tiny. She had an official name, but we never used it. She just listens to Tiny and Cat now, so her name is Tiny. She's a tricolor cat, so colorful all over. Like, her face is split in pretty much entirely down the middle between black and orange. And she is extremely cuddly. She loves people. She loves being cuddled. She doesn't like being, like, carried around. But she has some problems, which I attribute totally to getting hit by a car when she was pretty young. She's totally fine.
Yeah, that was terrible.
But since then, she's had problems with, like, emotional regulation and letting people know if she doesn't like it. So you can pet her and then it just gets too much for a second, or she hears something and gets spooked and she will just attack you and rip your arm to shreds. Which makes it quite hard to leave her around people who don't have much cat experience, because she will not hiss at you, she will not, like, swat at you without claws, she will go from purring to tearing your arm off without any warning. It's gotten better in recent years since she's gotten older, just does little quacking noises. She does not meow, she quacks. Like, when she likes you, she comes in, she comes over and goes like, nyeh, 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 nyeh. And that's not a noise cats should make. Mm-hmm. But she does. You may now talk about your pets.
Yeah, see, Bean is different, my cat, because Bean just murders for the fun of it. Bean doesn't eat the mice she kills. Never. She just plays with them until they're dead and then lays them out in front of us.
She is actually tiny.
Bean is actually very small. Her original name was Beauty. We never called her Beauty, despite the fact that she is a beauty. But she's a bean.
She's a beauty.
Beauty and the Bean. She was very frightful at the start because she was, like, a foundling originally. But she lives with us and she is absolutely adorable and she wants her belly scratched. And sometimes she attacks you, but she attacks you, like, in a way where she doesn't actually hurt you. She puts her claws into your arm a little bit, but not enough to leave scratches. And she bites you, but, like, after that your hand is just wet. Like, she doesn't actually pierce the skin or anything. She just likes the game. She's just here for the game.
She's just a young little kitty cat who likes to murder things.
Yeah.
Like my cat. She's an old little kitty cat who likes to murder things.
Sadly, I do not currently live with cats, but my family does have two cats that I see often enough, I guess. Milo and Nero, which, like, why do you give your cat the name Nero if you don't want him to kill a lot of mice, which is also what he does? Now, Nero is a very sweet cat, very loving, usually does not attack people, unless you are hand feeding him and you will get bitten because he's just so fucking greedy.
Guys, you have seen lions being fed that are more civilized than Nero.
Yes, definitely. Now, Milo, we thought at first he was shy, but he's actually just antisocial. He just doesn't like to be among people most of the time, which is relatable, honestly. He does love cuddling on his own terms. He is not as greedy as his brother, which is, like, during feeding times, a problem. Yeah, they're very cute, and I love them.
I very, very sadly do not have a cat. I desperately wish to have one, but I need to convince some people.
One day.
Damn living one arrangements.
I want to ask one more question myself. And that is, what would the characters think of Cats 2019?
Oh yeah, that's an important one.
As we've established, Moon cannot understand the movie. Their opinion would just be based entirely upon Charlotte and Max's thoughts during the movie. So I guess I'm going to ask you guys.
Okay, I'm going to say something maybe controversial. And that is, Cats 2019 is just a normal movie for Max.
Mm.
Oh no!
With how uncanny Dreamland is and like the shit that goes down there. It's just like a movie. It's not like a particularly great movie, but all the enjoyment that people take out of it for it being weird, Max doesn't get because it's just too normal for him.
What about Charlotte?
Well, Charlotte is probably a big fan of the musical and really enjoys it and therefore is, you know, she watched a movie one time and I was like, what the fuck? what did I just watch? They made the weirdest choices ever and she will try to forget it.
I'm going to do Will again real quick. Will says he has never watched it. He has. He has watched it because he's actually a big fan of the musical. But he really didn't enjoy it and he doesn't want people to know that he likes the musical or musicals in general.
Okay, but which NPC would like Cats? Like, which NPC would like that movie?
Incent.
Incent, yeah. Incent would like it. Incent isn't critical of movies. Like, Incent is definitely someone who, like, walks out of every movie and says, that was a good time.
All right. Then I think on that note, we will end this episode. And hopefully you liked it. If you have some thoughts or follow-up questions about what we talked about here, feel free to write them at us and our socials. We are at WaypointPod on Twitter, Tumblr, Blue Sky, TikTok, and Instagram. Or if you have something that is not easily captured in a few words, you can also write us an email via waypointheroes@gmail.com. Or, you know, just let us know if you have any more questions that are about my cat.
And that we can answer in the next Q&A in like 2 years.
Yeah,
exactly. We don't forget the questions. They will come up. It might just take a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. With that, I hope you have a great day, night, or otherwise. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.